Well, on May 19th, 1992, Vice President Dan Quayle gave a speech which he was heavily criticized for. It had to do with the original version of the TV show Murphy Brown. Brown was a divorced TV news anchor, and on the show, she gave birth to a child outside of marriage. And this is some of what Vice President Quayle said. Bearing babies irresponsibly is simply wrong. Failing to support children one has fathered is wrong. We must be unequivocal about this. It doesn't help matters when primetime TV has Murphy Brown, a character who supposedly epitomizes today's intelligent, highly paid professional woman, mocking the importance of fathers by bearing a child alone and calling it just another lifestyle choice. Quayle was mocked severely for his comments. I remember a conversation I had with a college student who blatantly said, "Dan Quayle is an idiot." And I was pretty sure I knew what the answer to my next question was going to be, but I asked him anyway. I said, "What makes you say that?" And his only answer was, "Murphy Brown." It was like that was supposed to be a complete and final explanation for calling Dan Quayle an idiot. But history has proven, as an opinion piece by the Brookings Institution says, it turns out Dan Quayle was right about Murphy Brown. Today, with children born outside of marriage at a rate of 40% nationwide, and for some segments of our society, around 70% of children are born out of wedlock, he was right. A TV show that normalizes single parenthood will have a negative influence on the world. Dan Quayle was right that a TV show that presents single parenthood as simply one choice among many for a family would have an influence on culture. He was right to believe what Hollywood actually says about itself, that they are the storytellers of our culture, that they write stories to dispel myths about our culture. The problem is that means Hollywood gets to determine what's a myth, and then they get to replace it with what they believe is truth. Revelation chapter 17 exposes the ugliness behind the glamour of things in our culture, like TV shows and movies and music, and shows them to be what they are. And it's not just about entertainment, but about an entire system of this world that we currently live in. And in this revelation given to John, this world system is referred to as a city and given the name Babylon. I want you to listen as I read through Revelation chapter 17. Then one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls came and said to me, "Come, I will show you the judgment of the great prostitute who is seated on many waters, with whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and with the wine of whose sexual immorality the dwellers on earth have become drunk. And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness. And I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names. And it had seven heads and 10 horns. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and jewels and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the impurities of her sexual immorality. And on her forehead was written a name of mystery, Babylon the Great, mother of prostitutes and of earth's abominations. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. When I saw her, I marveled greatly. But the angel said to me, 'Why do you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and of the beast with 7 heads and 10 horns that carries her. The beast that you saw was and is not, and is about to rise from the bottomless pit and go to destruction. And the dwellers on earth, whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world, will marvel to see the beast, because it was, and is not, and is to come. This calls for a mind with wisdom, The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman is seated. They are also seven kings, five of whom have fallen. One is, the other has not yet come, and when he does come, he must remain only a little while. As for the beast that was and is not, it is an eighth, but it belongs to the seven, and it goes to destruction. And the ten horns that you saw are ten kings who have not yet received royal power, but they are to receive authority as kings for 1 hour, together with the beast. These are of one mind, and they hand over their power and authority to the beast. They will make war on the Lamb, and the Lamb will conquer them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those with him are called and chosen and faithful. And the angel said to me, "The waters that you saw where the prostitute is seated are peoples and multitudes and nations and languages. And the ten horns that you saw, they and the beast will hate the prostitute. They will make her desolate and naked and devour her flesh and burn her up with fire, for God has put it into their hearts to carry out his purpose by being of one mind and handing over their royal power to the beast until the words of God are fulfilled. And the woman that you saw is the great city that has dominion over the kings of the earth." So as we think about this passage, the first question we have to answer is, who or what is Babylon? In verse 9, it says, "This calls for a mind with wisdom. The seven heads are seven mountains on which the woman is seated." So the seven heads of the beast represent seven mountains on which the woman is seated. And here, the woman, this prostitute, is seated on these seven mountains. Then the city of Rome was commonly known as a city on seven hills. It seems very likely that the first people to hear, to read John's letter, would have taken this as a reference to the city of Rome, to the Roman Empire. So can we just say that this great city that's going to be destroyed is Rome? Well, it's not quite that simple. Because if you look at the next verse, verse 10, it says, "They are also seven kings." The heads of this beast are also seven kings, five of whom have fallen. One is, the other is not yet come, and when he does come, he must remain only a little while. So here we see that the seven heads of the beast also represent seven different kings. And we've already seen this beast before in Revelation chapter 13. He came out of the sea, and we saw there that this beast gets his power from the dragon, which is Satan. And this beast is behind the anti-God governments that have ruled the world. Five of these governments, five of these kingdoms have fallen. One is, and one has not yet come. And as you go through history, you see these major world empires: Egypt, Assyria, Babylon, Persia, Greece, the five of these kings that have already come. And at the time John writes, Rome is the one that is. And so now we see that this woman is represented in the current time for John by the powerful anti-God city, nation, empire of Rome. But it's also been riding on the back of every anti-God government in the history of the world, going as far back as ancient Egypt, where Pharaoh oppressed the people of Israel, God's chosen people, and made them slaves. Then we have one more clue that helps us to understand more about this Babylon the Great, this city. In verse 15, it says, "And the angel said to me, 'The waters that you saw, where the prostitute is seated, are peoples and multitudes and nations and languages.'" See, that the woman is riding on kings shows that this woman, this prostitute, is not limited to any segment of time. She goes throughout the history of the world. And now this verse shows us that she is not limited geographically either. The many waters that she's seated on represent people all over the face of the earth. Her influence is not in just one city. Her influence is worldwide. So why the name Babylon? Now, some have suggested that the ancient kingdom of Babylon is actually going to be resurrected one day, that it will be rebuilt for these last days. Now, this was an especially popular theory during the Gulf Wars, when we were at war with Iraq, where ancient Babylon is actually at. And some believed that Saddam Hussein was actually resurrecting this city, this ancient Babylon. But that doesn't fit well with the symbols that we've just seen, that Babylon goes across multiple spans of history and encompasses the whole world. It goes all over the geography of the earth. But ancient Babylon was a nation, it was a city that epitomized what is pictured here as Babylon the Great. If you remember from the book of Daniel, you read about Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon. He conquered Israel and Judah, and they took God's people away to make them live in a foreign land. They forced them to bow down to idols and worship false gods. You remember the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, where Nebuchadnezzar had them thrown into the fiery furnace because they would not bow down to his false god. They would not bow down to his idol. And God delivered them from that. Remember how Daniel had to go to great lengths from eating the food that he knew would defile him religiously before God. And Nebuchadnezzar was an arrogant, proud king. He was so arrogant that God eventually sent him out and made him like a wild beast to show him that God was the God over all things, that God was the God over all kings. And so arrogant and idolatrous was Babylon that its name became synonymous with this world system that stands in opposition to God. You know, it's kind of like asking a question about the stock market and saying, "What's Wall Street saying?" Now, when you hear that, you don't imagine somebody on actual Wall Street looking down with their ear to the pavement, listening to see what the street's saying. No, when somebody says, "What's Wall Street saying?" they're wondering, what are the financial investors? What are the bankers? What are they saying about what's going on? And it's similar with Babylon. It's this image of the world system that is opposed to God. And so we have this picture of the system of this world, and it is an ugly picture. It's a prostitute riding a wild beast. The beast is an instrument of Satan, and it's propping up the prostitute. She's getting her power from the beast. And we know from what John has already written that this prostitute, Babylon the Great, is going to be destroyed. It was mentioned in the seventh bowl where God remembered Babylon the Great to make her drain the cup of his wrath. And John begins this chapter with the angel saying he will show the judgment of the great prostitute. And so with chapter 17, 18, and even into chapter 19, it's like we're zooming in to get more detail of the judgment of this world system that stands in opposition to God. And as we start to look into the judgment that's coming, we're going to see three characteristics of the world, this world system that we must be on guard against and which make it imperative that we remember that the Lamb, Jesus Christ, has conquered the world. So start in look at verse 2. The verse says, "With whom the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality, and with the wine of whose sexual immorality the dwellers on earth have become drunk." So the angel here is going to show John the judgment of the great prostitute. And before he shows him anything, he reminds him of her character. This is the one that the kings of the earth have committed sexual immorality with. Now, this isn't literal. This is not a prostitute that has been physically intimate with kings all over the earth. That's not what's going on here. Sexual immorality is very often used in Scripture to refer to spiritual infidelity. In fact, when you look at the way the idea of a harlot or a prostitute is used, it refers much, much more to spiritual infidelity than it does to infidelity between a husband and a wife. The kings of the earth have been unfaithful. They have abandoned their good, right, God-given role of servant to the people, and they have lusted after power instead. Rulers and politicians do what is good for themselves and their donors without thinking about what's truly good and right. They've turned away from God as their authority, and they've ruled from a completely secular, man-centered view of the world. And in this picture, Babylon is the temptress that seduces governments away from godliness. But it's not just kings that are affected. The dwellers on earth become drunk with the wine of her sexual immorality. This prostitute is serving something, and it is making inhabitants of the earth drunk. They're drinking from the hand of the prostitute, and it's lulling them into this drunken stupor that deadens their senses. They are desensitized to the temptations and seduction that will keep getting thrown at them. And this prostitute uses many different means to seduce. The sexual immorality here is not intended to be literal, but we would be foolish to not acknowledge that sexual temptation is a huge weapon for this demonically inspired prostitute. But she also uses religion to make people drunk. Look at verse 3. And he carried me away in the spirit into a wilderness, and I saw a woman sitting on a scarlet beast that was full of blasphemous names, and it had 7 heads and 10 horns. See, this beast has blasphemous names on it. These aren't curses like we would think of blasphemy. They are a further attempt to accomplish what we saw happening in Revelation 13. See, the beast wants your worship. The blasphemous names on the beast are names that are only rightfully attributed to God. Satan is after your worship. He is after your allegiance. And this prostitute is all part of his scheme to counterfeit the blessings of God and to get you to trust in something, to get you to trust in anything other than God. Look at verse 4. The woman was arrayed in purple and scarlet and adorned with gold and jewels and pearls, holding in her hand a golden cup full of abominations and the impurities of her sexual immorality. One of the other ways she's going to do this is through wealth. She's clothed in rich clothing with expensive jewelry. And when we get to chapter 18, we'll see that part of what this world system brings to the table is economic activity. Revelation 18, verses 15 through 17 says, "The merchants of these wares who gained wealth from her will stand far off in fear of her torment, weeping and mourning aloud. Alas, alas! For the great city that was clothed in fine linen and purple and scarlet, adorned with gold and jewels and with pearls, for in a single hour all this wealth has been laid waste." When Babylon the Great is destroyed, merchants will grieve because the market for their stuff is gone. And I can't help but think that we are living in the midst of something like what is talked about here in Revelation chapter 18. Markets toppling, unemployment skyrocketing, economies put on hold for weeks and months. Now, I don't want, anytime you mention that something sounds similar to the book of Revelation, the immediate temptation is to say, oh, well, that means the end is almost here. That's not what I'm saying at all. But there are definitely similarities in what is currently happening in our world and what is described in the destruction of Babylon the Great. This prostitute has a cup full of abominations, and there are many other ways that this prostitute makes people drunk. The cup is full. There's all kinds of abominations and impurities that this prostitute is giving the world to drink. And in verse 5, it says, "On her forehead was written a name of mystery, Babylon the Great, mother of prostitutes and of earth's abominations. This woman is the embodiment of the temptations and sinful things of the world, and she is making the world drunk with her temptations. We have to be on guard against this, and we must keep our eyes fixed on Jesus, remembering that he has conquered the world because the world is intoxicating. When you're intoxicated, your senses are deadened. You're desensitized to things. The reason some people, I remember hearing this in college, the reason some people think that they're the life of the party when they're drunk is because their inhibitions are deadened. Because there are things that used to seem embarrassing or stupid or dangerous that when they're drunk, they're not afraid to do. And so you just do whatever you think about doing. Reading in Proverbs this week reminded me of the effects of drunkenness. The author of Proverbs writes to his son to warn him of drunkenness and tells him that drunkards become poor. They're clothed in rags. They have sorrow. They have strife. They have complaints. He says, the wine looks good in the glass. It sparkles. It goes down smoothly, but in the end, it bites like a snake. The father says, you'll get beaten and not feel it. Eventually, you'll pass out if you don't get knocked out. And the end of the father's sermon on drunkenness is that you will wake up just looking for when you can get another drink. Now, what an apt picture of the temptation of this prostitute that intoxicates us. We are fed movies and TV shows and music and news stories that make ungodly behavior seem normal. We're told that everything can be figured out by science, so much so that we trust in science in a way that's like we're believing in a false god. The world is intoxicating, and we need to be on guard that we are not drinking what she is serving. And one of the things that she is serving is security. Look at verse 6. And I saw the woman drunk with the blood of the saints, the blood of the martyrs of Jesus. And you might say, well, where in the world do you get security out of that verse? Well, see, this anti-God world system represented by the prostitute persecutes the church. And she isn't just guilty of a little bit of persecution. She is satiated with it. She is drunk with the blood of Christians. And if this woman were to smile, you would see her blood-stained teeth from all of the blood of the saints that she has made herself drunk with. It's a disgusting image, and it is supposed to be. But it also reveals one way that this prostitute tries to intoxicate people, and that is through offering safety and security, because there is great danger in resisting the world. The world persecutes Christians. The world tries to set up things against Christians, says, just turn your back on Jesus, renounce Jesus, and everything will be okay. If you renounce Jesus, your family will be safe. If you turn away from Jesus, we'll let you go. Going along with the world appears safe. But we have to remember what we saw earlier in Revelation, that you cannot escape wrath. You will either face the wrath of the beast or you will face the wrath of the Lamb. We need to be particularly aware of this intoxicant of safety in the air we breathe in the United States. We feel secure. This pandemic, I think, was especially threatening to us because I think to some extent we felt like we shouldn't be vulnerable to something like this. You know, we feel secure if we have a lot of money in the bank. And when our investments drop, the way we feel about that reveals a lot about whether our security is in God or in our financial situation. See, the world says, don't give your money to take the gospel to the ends of the earth. That's foolish. You need to save that. You need to invest that. You need a new TV that will order a pizza for you while you're watching Netflix. You know, you've got to have that. That's more important than giving money so people can hear the gospel. We need to watch out for the world's attempts to intoxicate us with the safety and security of this life, because this world will pass away. The Lamb has conquered it. And if you are living with this prostitute in a drunken state, you are living for something that is going to get thrown away. Now, I want you to look back at verses 6 and 7. I want us to see one more reason why it is so hard to keep sober in this world. Verse 6, at the end of verse 6, John says, "When I saw her, I marveled greatly." Now, what's going on here? John says he marveled greatly when he saw this prostitute riding the beast. And here's the deal. Prostitutes don't dress themselves up to be made unattractive. You know, so here's what I think's going on here. John sees this woman. He sees this woman riding the beast, and he is drawn to this woman. This is like a husband in the grocery store with his wife, and he sees a beautiful woman walk by, and he starts to watch the woman walk by. And then in verse 7, this is the wife elbowing her husband in the ribs and letting him know what's going on. "The angel said to me, 'Why do you marvel? I will tell you the mystery of the woman and the beast with seven heads and 10 horns that carries her.'" John, why are you marveling? Why are you amazed? The same word in the next verse: "The beast that you saw was and is not and is about to rise from the bottomless pit and go to destruction, and the dwellers on earth whose names have not been written in the book of life from the foundation of the world will marvel to see the beast." They're in awe. They're amazed at this beast. John marveled at the prostitute. And the point here is the world is alluring. It draws us in. The things that can tempt you to turn away from Jesus have to be attractive in some way. If Satan is going to pull people away from the one who is described as the lily of the valley, as the bright morning star, if he's going to pull people away from the one that we sing saying, "Fair is the sunshine, fairer still the moonlight, and all the twinkling starry host, Jesus shines brighter. Jesus shines purer than all the angels heaven can boast." We read that Satan masquerades as an angel of light. You see, if Satan is going to seduce people away from Jesus, he is going to have to look good. He's not going to present this harlot like most prostitutes actually are, destitute and desperate, doing the only thing that they can to make a living, or doing what they're doing in order to keep their addiction fed if they're not actually in slavery of some kind. No, this prostitute is beautiful. She is wealthy. She is on top of the world. She is riding on top of kings. She's riding on the beast that represents kings throughout history. The world is alluring, and so we must remember to look at the beauty of Christ and remember that the beauty of the world's temptations is just a mirage. It's empty, and it will one day be destroyed by the Lamb of God, Jesus Christ. This passage shows us the prostitute, the beast, and the Lamb. Throughout history, this beast is at work seeking the worship of people, and the prostitute is at work seducing humanity away from God. But most importantly, what we need to remember as we study this passage is that God is at work. And through the cross, we know that the Lamb of God has already conquered the god of this world. We read earlier in Revelation 5 that the Lion of the tribe of Judah, the Root of David, has conquered. And when John heard that voice and looked, what did he see? He saw a lamb standing as though it had been slain. And here we see that conquering that Jesus did at the cross come to its final fruition. Do you remember what happened when the fifth trumpet blew? There was a bottomless pit that was opened, and out of that bottomless pit came this swarm of locusts that represented a horde of demons coming to torment people on the earth. And here, as the beast is described, and we are reminded that the beast is behind these anti-God kingdoms of the world, we see in verse 8 that this beast is going to come out of the bottomless pit. But what's going to happen when he comes out? He comes out and he leads these kings to make war against the Lamb. But look at verse 14. These kings led by the beast will make war on the Lamb, and the Lamb will conquer them. For he is Lord of lords and King of kings, and those with him are called and chosen and faithful. Again, I want to tell you that if you are trusting in the things of this world, you are trusting in a mirage. You are being seduced by a blood-drinking, booze-pushing prostitute that is in league with Satan. But this world is passing away, and we are moving toward a new heaven and a new earth. And there is one and only one way to be a part of that new heaven and new earth. And that is to trust Jesus Christ's death and resurrection to take away the wrath of God for you and to give you his righteousness. Jesus said, "I am the way and the truth and the life. No one comes to the Father except through me." He conquered this world by defeating death. He died and rose again. And anyone who trusts Jesus to save them from the wrath of God has eternal life and will be spending eternity in the new heavens and the new earth with God forever. And we need to learn lessons from things that happen in this world. We need to see the things that happen in this world and see them in such a way that point us to God. We should look at the things that happen. I've said this over and over. We should look at this COVID-19 virus and see what should we be learning that points us to God. And I actually came across a quote from the director of the World Health Organization. He agrees with me that we should learn something from this virus. And he says, "If this virus is teaching us anything, it's humility." And I'm thinking, so far, so good. Yeah, it's good for us to learn humility. But then his final assessment is what concerns me. He said, "We do not need a review to tell us what we must all that we must all do everything in our power to ensure this never happens again." And my concern with his answer is that the only power we will look to is our power. Yes, we should look to science for answers. Yes, we should look for what we can do to help the situation and keep the disease from spreading. But if we stop at our power and we believe that the greatest thing available to us is our knowledge and our scientific research and our scientific methods and the things that we can do to stop this pandemic, we are simply drunk on the wine of the great prostitute and we don't even know it. Our hope is not in this world. Our hope is not in what we know. Our hope is in the Lamb, the King of kings, the Lord of lords who has conquered. Our hope is in Jesus. He has conquered. And through his blood and through the word of our testimony about his life, death, and resurrection, and by living in such a way that we don't love our lives in this world, even to the point of death, we will conquer with him.